Welcome to another episode of Hooked on Score. I'm your host, Rick Urban, and with me today we have something special for you guys. We have the band Never Not Nothing. These two composed the score for the latest Macy Williams film, The Owners. Of course, Macy Williams, Arya Stark from Game of Thrones. This film also stars one of the Doctor Who's, Sylvester McCoy. Now, I have to admit, I am not up on all of the Doctor Who's, which is probably sacrilegious in London. You guys might have to educate me a little bit on that. But we have Space and Vibes from Never Not Nothing joining us from London. How are you guys?
Very well, thank you.
Very good, yeah.
For scoring this film, and by the way, this is a score. A lot of times when bands score a film, it's just songs laid over a film. This is an actual film score.
It's not just loads of riffs, no.
Yeah. And there's apparently a lot went into the scoring of this film. From what I have heard, you guys kind of did a... you tried to recreate the experience of the film in creating the score. So for those of you that haven't seen this yet, by the way, this is on Hulu. The film is called The Owners, and it is set in a kind of remote house on the in the English countryside, and there is a sort of a home invasion slash break-in, and it kind of goes down the route of thriller slash horror, a lot of different elements in there. But you guys, I guess, tried to create that feeling when you were creating the score by sort of isolating yourselves. Is that right?
Yeah, we call it method music. We always like to take everything to the nth degree, really. So we disappeared. We were given a really short turnaround to get the score together. And for one of the reasons was so that we don't both get divorced.
Wait, divorced from each other or divorced from separate relationships? Because
both.
Half the times a band working on a film could split up, and then that would just be a total disaster.
I would never divorce you, Space.
No, we've spent more time with each other than we've spent with our other halves, so I think we're safe. the other reason was to kind of really isolate ourselves. So we got out of London and we went to this really, really remote barn in Dartmoor, and we kind of wanted the space that we recorded and wrote the score in to be a part of the score, to feature as its own kind of element. So the acoustics of it, and this was a really, really old stone barn that had been there for a good couple of hundred years. Mm. So it had a real vibe, and it was pretty much the two of us and a visiting string session player every now and again in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Working day and night.
So you could really focus on the feel of the film as well as focus on just purely creating.
Yeah.
And it's great that you guys had the live players coming in for the strings, because those work really well in the context of the score. And then I also heard you guys did some interesting sampling around the house for the drums and the percussion elements of the score.
Yeah, it was actually the viola player left the room and had my headphones on. And I asked her, could you please leave again? Because that sounded so good. And then we just sampled the door closing of the barn. Uh-huh. And that became the kick drum throughout the score, really.
Wow. That's, it's funny how sometimes accidental sounds, almost chance music in a way, where you find something that works really well and it becomes a major theme of the movie.
Pretty much there's another sound in the movie that was another accidental kind of sound. I was doing working on a music project in Chernobyl, and I was creating the sample library, sampling everything, And I didn't realize till we got back to the studio that I'd caught this rubble falling in a distant building. And that ends up on so many records. It's all over this score. It's a really kind of low, rumbling kind of crash.
Wow.
It just works on so much stuff.
Yeah, it's organic and low and brooding. And yes, yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think I did hear that a couple times. It, I think it kind of woke up my cat in the when I was watching this movie. All of a sudden, I see a ball of fur kind of rise up out of nowhere. So I think I actually know the sound you're talking about. But I wanted to ask you about that project because that sounded really interesting. So you went to, is it Pripyat? Is that how you pronounce that? I forget from the... I got done watching the Chernobyl HBO series a couple months back, and I forgot how to pronounce the name of the town, but it's where the Chernobyl disaster was, the town that was basically affected by that. So how did that project come about?
It was actually through Killer Tracks, now Universal Music. Okay. They... We had pitched to them to go make a series of compositions about kind of nuclear fallout and disaster. And instead of, you can't really write about that stuff sitting in a cozy studio in London, quite happy. So we kind of went out and we said we're only really allowed to go to some missile silos out in Russia and Ukraine. But we ended up, we said we wanted to go to Chernobyl, but they said, it, you know, the insurance wouldn't let us. we just went and sent them a picture, and there wasn't a lot they could do about it.
Yeah, insurance, and for the whole nuclear fallout, insurance gets a little queasy in general, I think.
Yeah, it was quite a full-on time. The whole Ukrainian uprising was kind of happening at the time, and there was a lot of turmoil in the country, and it was interesting kind of digging into those stories and meeting the people and meeting the resettlers and recording the music in situ with those reverbs and those amazing abandoned spaces, and sampling the, like, there's pianos left behind there, there's, you know, some of the rhythm tracks were just made out of the gas masks that were lying on the floor. And it's a really harrowing part of the world with a really dark history, but some really, really lovely people that kind of took us under their wing and showed us around. And we ended up getting chased out of the zone. Oh, it was, yeah, I'm not going to go into it too far.
Legal disclaimer.
It was an adventure, but that was kind of the first chance we really got to put the method music to the test, really, to kind of push it, the theme so far and really put yourself in uncomfortable positions and take stories from source and take recordings from the source and sample the spaces and the reverb impulses and create the kind of tapestry and sonic landscape of the music by actually going and being there and getting involved and kind of getting it from the horse's mouth, really.
Yeah, and I imagine, you know, anybody in that area, you know, their life and their whole history, I mean, didn't happen that long ago, you know, when you kind of, I remember watching the HBO series about it, and I'm like, holy cow, like, this is pretty much in my lifetime, and it just seems like, you know, when you learn about it, it was eons ago, but it's pretty recent. Like, the people that have gone through that or, you know, been near it just has to be so affected by it, you know? I mean...
Yeah, I mean, the effects are still evolving and they're still learning... Yeah. Who is being affected, because it traveled. I mean, initially it was Sweden that caught a lot of the kind of fallout from it, because it just went up and traveled across the ocean. But yeah, it's still an evolving situation, really.
I'm glad you're still standing. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm still alive. Just.
Yeah, wow. Well, I want to jump back into the film here. Again, the film is The Owners. And how did this come about? Is this the first time you guys have scored a film?
Yeah. Yeah, this is our first full feature film score, and we loved it. It was great fun.
How did you go about like getting the gig, meeting the director, and everything like that?
Well, it's actually our label boss, Julie at Sony. She used to work with the producer, and they were out for lunch or something, and he was like, "I need someone to score this movie that 'cause the person they really wanted couldn't do it." So, and she was like, I know who would be great for this. And we'd always said that's, you know, high on our bucket list. We want to get into scoring films as well as making records and producing records. So it was a really nice opportunity to get given. And we went and met with the director and really kind of hit it off and talked at lengths about his ideas for the film and, you know, what he loved musically and how he kind of wanted us to come in and kind of push it as far as we want. He kind of gave us free rein, which was really nice.
And was the director, by the way, is Julius Berg. Was there any sort of trepidation about usually when directors working with artists that haven't worked on a film before, there's usually either a level of excitement or a level of nervousness. Which one was the more prevailing feeling?
Both.
I think the meat was kind of trickling towards nervousness.
Yeah, definitely more nervous, you know. But I think, so, I mean, initially, we kind of went away and said, well, we'll score, you know, a scene for you. And then we'll see. So we went and did some tests, and the feedback was really, really positive. And we're like, yes, let's do it. I think just, I can understand with your first, it was his first kind of English speaking feature as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's his baby. He wants it to go well. I understand that nervousness.
Yeah.
But, after that, it was all fine. Yeah. It was all great.
I feel like, especially this year, when Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are nominated for 2 Golden Globes, and one of them's a Disney Pixar film, I feel like there's no rules anymore as far as who can write music for movies and who can't. Like, you don't need traditional, film composition training or orchestration training or anything like that. I think directors now are looking for people that create unique music more than anything. Would you agree?
Yeah. I think it's all about emotion as well. If it's the right emotion you want to portray, you get the right artist to do that or the right composer. So, yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. It's all about kind of all music's about generating a mood and a narrative. And just because you haven't done it before doesn't mean you don't understand the concept behind it. It's a bit like one of those things where if you studied, then you might have some habits and some tropes that you're easily going to fall into. And if you're kind of coming in fresh from a different angle, I think that's why Trent does so well, because he comes in from a unique space, not one that's kind of studied what it is to be a film composer in kind of classical standards.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think what you said about, yeah, not falling back on those sort of built-in, almost researched history tropes is something that a lot of directors hate, you know, and they hate the sort of foreshadowing with the music. And you guys didn't really do any of that in this film. It's all in the moment where it's, you know, you don't give anything away and you don't react to anything. It's all sort of there simultaneously as a visuals. So bravo for that. And the music is very unique in a lot of spots and very present. Like, they didn't shy away. A lot of times, you know, the music is mixed so far down that you don't really feel it. But this, especially right from the beginning, I noticed the music is kind of right in the forefront. Did you guys have a hand in the overall mixing process, or did somebody else do that?
We did mix every... what do you call it?
Reels. Yeah, we mixed all the reels, but we didn't have anything to do with the dialogue and the the dub mix. Yeah,
that would have been nice actually, because that's you work so hard on something and you're like waiting for it to come back. Because like, well, did they just like well, turn it all down?
Little tip for your next film: have it built into your contract that you want to be at the dub mix, because that's when the real decisions and the volume knobs are. You know, the faders get pushed down, and then all of a sudden the music disappears. But I mean, whoever did it on this one really did a good job, because the music is very clear throughout, and I think everything comes across really well. And obviously the actual production value of it has a lot to do with that. And how much did you guys think about production value versus composition when you guys were producing this music?
A lot, I'd say. I think deliberately it's quite close, and that's part of being in wanting to go to like an old and small space as well when we were recording. So it wasn't a big voluminous reverb that we're dealing with. It's based in a small house. It should feel like it's right up next to you when you hear the music. Mm. So we did, because we're producers as well as writers. So it's kind of a part of our color palette, really. So we used it as much as we had to, because there were so many limitations, you know, time, budget. We kind of took what we had. We worked a lot with tape actually to do some interesting things with the harmony and the themes. So sometimes they're played and non-manipulated, and sometimes we used the trusty Tascam. So I had a stack of old Japanese tapes from the 80s that I think sound really good, and we would generate massive stacked, the harmony all stacked up in different kind of ways, evolving textures on Logic, and then we would record them, each chord, onto the tape machine, and we would play the chords one on each fader, so we could kind of almost use the tape as an instrument, and then use the speed of the tape to generate fluctuations and pitch and weird anomalies. But we'd also play back some of the melodies purely on tape, just by changing the speed of the tape player.
Mm. So you kind of created your own sample instrument out of a sampler in a way.
Yeah, there was lots of that, lots of manipulating sounds, because a lot of the movie is about manipulation, pretty much. There's not a character in there who isn't being manipulated at some point. So we did a lot of that with the sound as well.
Wow. Mm. And when you were doing that manipulation, were different sounds associated with different characters, or was it overall just kind of thinking of the film overall?
Yeah, there's one character called Terry, and he had a very subtle, specific theme, which is very brittle, wasn't it? It was a thin, brittle kind of showed his fragility, you know.
And it's kind of abstract. It's not like a melodic theme or anything. It was almost a feeling that was almost kind of subverts the way you think about him as a person as well. So we would use that. And some other parts specifically for certain people as well.
For those of you that haven't seen it, I'm not going to give anything away. I'm very sensitive of spoilers. But at one point, it kind of takes a turn, and it kind of goes a little bit darker. What did you guys think about that consciously, that the music has to get darker at that point?
No, it definitely has stages throughout the score. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
definitely.
You have to try and like lure people the wrong way with the thriller, don't you? You kind of have to be like suggesting that something else is going to happen with the music, and
yeah.
But at the end of it, it's just messed up.
Yeah, and actually a lot of the cues that, you know, in the big. I don't want to call it the final fight scene, but let's just say when the tear gas starts to fall, the music really takes over, and it's pretty repetitive, but it's just so effective, and it's just sort of like this sonic landscape behind all the action that's happening. So Yeah, I really enjoyed that cue in particular. And it has that grinding quality.
You can hear our sleep deprivation by that time. But a lot of that was real, like, kind of really intense live synth takes that were kind of done in one big take, where they were evolving. Even though it was repetitive, we wanted it to feel like it was kind of in a kind of organic techno kind of way, kind of slowly being manipulated and evolving and kind of breathing in a way, even though it's quite the jar between the kind of manipulated strings and the synthesizers are really kind of full on and edgy. There's just things breathing in there and kind of moving with the picture, with the movement.
It reminds me of a level of a game that you're never going to win.
There's no winning. It's everything. All hope is lost. Yeah.
That's an interesting analogy. I never thought about it that way. It's when you get to that level that you just never can never beat it. And there is the music in the background of it.
Yeah.
The sound of pure despair.
I'm always fascinated when I see duos like yourself, the process of writing music with another person it's something that's so, you know, writing music and creating, it's so personal. But I think the thing about movies is it's such a collaborative process. I think a lot of that you kind of have built in. But as far as your creation of your music, would you guys mind talking a little bit, like, each individually of what kind of roles you bring to the table, if there is any sort of designation when you guys are creating music?
We're quite fortunate, aren't we? Because we love doing it all. So we'll tag in, you know, if someone's, you know, falling, getting a bit tired in one section, the other person will tag in, and then we combine forces and do, you know, it all together. But I wouldn't.
Yeah. I think if you wanted to, like, simplify it, I normally do the big brushstrokes, you know, the gestural stuff and the ideas, and Vinny is like a real details man, and we totally play off each other. So where one person leaves off, the other one jumps in, and then it's a bit of a hive mind, because we've known each other for so long. It's we've got a vocabulary together that just works seamlessly, really.
Yeah, if you were in the room with us, you wouldn't know what the hell was going on.
You guys have your own, like, language and everything like that.
We just don't talk, we just think together.
Yeah, it's all clicks and winks.
Clicks and winks, I love that.
It's like a group mind thing happening, so.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
When you're creating songs, do you guys, does one of you have an idea and the other one adds on it, or is it something where you guys kind of sit down and try and jam, if you will?
So we kind of normally, I'll write, you know, I'll have an idea that's manifesting in my head, and then I'll go on a massive rant to Vibes about it, and he'll just stare at me, and then we spend a bit of time just with the dictaphone, and we jam it with our mouths, essentially, because it's all in our heads, and we get it out first just by doing the arrangement with our mouths and kind of vibing off each other like that. And then once we're that far, we'll jump on the instruments and we'll start. We like to start by kind of interacting and being very tactile and playing to begin with, and then we jump into the kind of production side once we've got a real feel for the physicality of the music. Whether it is, if with this it was started, I guess some of the kind of very simple melodies and harmony and a kind of interplay between that kind of counterpoint all just started on piano and playing around with it. I'd play it to Vinny and then he'd go, how about if it went here? And we start very physically and then we get into the computer.
And when you guys were doing this, I know you said you brought in a string player. And you guys did kind of the percussion yourselves. Was there any other kind of live instruments on it? Or is it all synth-based? Or is there guitar? You know, I couldn't really besides the strings, I couldn't really identify a particular instrument, which is often a good thing.
Pretty sure Space was hitting a bass at some point with something.
I have this. It's not. I haven't brought it from the old studio yet. It's like a block of wood with like a couple of welded bits of metal and made into a tuning peg and a nut. And it's got bass string just suspended between the two parts. And we put contact microphones on it. And when you hit it with implements, it creates really bizarre kind of overtones and pitch bends and stuff. So we'd play kind of percussion parts on that and then resample that and manipulate that. But I think it's pretty much strings.
Lots of voice, actually.
Bass wood,
yeah.
Voice. And synthesizer. So we do a lot of...
And fireplace.
All the kind of choral, kind of ethereal, paddy bits are mostly our vocals singing the harmony. So it's pretty much vocals, strings, synths.
And just stuff we hit in the house.
And found sounds, you know, samples that we've collected. We collect samples everywhere we go. But a lot of it is the old barn. The fireplace features a lot.
I've got a video of Space hitting it for about half an hour straight, just staring at Space. it's brilliant.
Had to get the right hit.
Yeah, it's funny. All those things that I do to find new sounds just annoy the hell out of my wife and my cats. Just pounding on the door. Stop making that noise. But it's really good. I've almost got it sounding perfect. So when you guys, this is the first time that you said you're scoring a film, and you said, was it 3 weeks or a month to finish this project? How tight was the time?
We wrote and recorded it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, Dartmoor for 2.5.
And then we brought it back to the studio in London to mix, and that was another week, so... I guess, yeah, about 3.5 weeks total turnaround we had. It was pretty intense, but we enjoyed it a lot.
I often said part of learning how to be a film composer is managing not sleeping in a really extreme way, because at a certain point when it's like 6 or 7 in the morning and you're like, well, I have to start on a cue now. I'm not even finishing a cue. I have to start something. It starts to be a draw, you know. It starts to, I don't know if people go into different modes, but I've found that oftentimes when the deadline approaches, you know, something happens where things start working, and I can't understand how it happens. But whenever I get a project, it's always like, I don't know anything. I don't know any music that's going to work for this picture. And then it always happens. Yeah. Did you guys have a moment when you guys started seeing the picture where you were like, I don't know what to put under this, or was it all very natural to you?
I think we like to think of pressure as an instrument. So we enjoy the deadline and the pressure, but also I think another instrument in the score is the isolation, not we only had ourselves to live by. We didn't have to stop or end at any point or make allowances for anyone else. We just full on, our heads were in this 24/7. We didn't really give ourselves a chance to question anything, really, which I think is good, because you don't procrastinate then. You just react constantly. And we'd already kind of decided on the palette that we were going to use and had pretty much planned out sonically what we were going to do. So it was just a matter of we'd limited time, and we had limited what we were going to allow ourselves to use with regards to instrumentation and ensembles. And that allowed us to be really, really focused and get it, you know, create quite succinctly.
And when you were in the isolation, writing this score, was there constant communication as far as approving different cues and reels with the director, or was it kind of like a big chunk delivery at the end of it?
It was a big chunk delivery with some fingers crossed, because he told us to just go for it. And luckily they really loved what we'd done.
Yeah,
and
then you guys must have had really an insane amount of trust from that director.
I'm glad he put that faith in us. And I think second time around, it'll be really interesting to work, because the picture was pretty much locked. So we had the film to work with. It would be really interesting to start, you know, earlier in that process and start thinking about the music and the palette sooner. I think it's really fun that was our first one. It's kind of, that's gone, it'd be cool to try a project a bit like this next and see what happens.
Was the movie done before the pandemic started, or was this done, because I know it came out in September 2020, I believe. Was this all kind of in the can before all the pandemic started, or was there anything happening during the pandemic?
We could have probably been in that barn and not known there was a pandemic going on.
You were already social distancing, right?
Yeah, we were locked down.
It's December, right? December last year.
Okay.
December
2019.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
So right then we before kind of, everything kind of shut
right
down.
Right before, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, we rolled straight out on tour straight after that, around Europe for 2 months, 2.5 months. Yeah. So we literally made it back and went straight into lockdown and straight into the pandemic.
And you, so you guys do, we're just looking at your website, and you guys have a lot of things still happening. Are you guys, what's the issue on starting to tour again and things like that?
We designed a show we call Sonic Shock Therapy, which is actually going out with holograms, and each it's a distant show. So when things open up a little bit more, everyone's essentially their own sound system. They get we're working with a company that do subsonic vests, so they'll each person will wear a vest that vibrates to the sub frequencies, and they'll have in-ear monitoring. So each one person is their own sound system.
That sounds fascinating. How did that project come about? Was that kind of designed thinking about coming out of the pandemic and how you could socially distance everybody?
It had been a kind of an idea that had been itching us for a while, and this was really the right time to do it when we were trying to design a show that we could repeat multiple times a day, so lots of people could see it. And a way, the therapy part's really about how, with that kind of distance, that isolation, how do you bring people into a shared experience and make them feel like they've connected with each other in a way. So it was kind of by design, really, yeah, so that we could do something within the limitations that are around us.
Well, that's bands are getting so creative. I know there's bands doing concerts where the audience are in bubbles and different pods and things like that, so everything is taken on obviously a completely different vibe now, but you know, people are starting to have to get very creative when it comes to how to present their music to people, because concerts might not ever be the same. I mean, do you guys think that concerts will ever be the same?
I think they're going to be better than ever.
Yeah. I think they're going to be wilder, more uncouth.
Yeah, Yeah, people are, you know, waiting for it probably, like ready to go. And yeah.
I like the idea that streaming has kind of caught up a bit. So say an artist you really love or you love their record is touring in the States and we're over here, we can buy a streaming ticket and experience the show completely differently, whether it's with a VR headset or whether it's, you know, in the studio with the monitors up, or it's a different experience. You can kind of see everything up close. You're not stood in a crowd of people. And then when it comes to town, I'll go see it again for sure, so that I can be in the thick of it and like see it from another perspective. I think it might be a golden age for live music again, because it will be more accessible.
Yeah.
Again. Yeah.
Fantastic. So is this, you said this, there might be another film project, or would you guys be opening to scoring another film in the future?
I think we're itching to do another one.
Yeah.
It was so, from going, before we did the score, we were working a lot in song form, and it was just so freeing to be able to have a whole movie to write music to. Mm-hmm. That didn't have to adhere to verse choruses or be within a short format that could kind of change and modulate and be different in a subtle way. So it was, we really, really enjoyed it. And it's a nice kind of break from working, producing bands and records and working on our own records, mm-hmm. where it's very much immediate, constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, it's probably a different set of muscles that you're developing and exercising as far as working with picture. Was there any, was it kind of unique in any way? I mean, it must have been working to picture. You said it was pretty much picture locked. What was that process like? And was it any different than you thought it would be?
No.
More inspiring than I thought it would be. It was, things were coming to us quite naturally.
Just from viewing the film?
From viewing the film and from being prepared, because we did create quite a lot of sample banks in the early days of the sessions.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah, that's going to go there. We had our ammunition, basically. So it was, yeah, I thought it was quite inspiring working to the picture.
Yeah, it was fun. I think it was really fun. Yeah, kind of reacting to the mood without any kind of score. You know, it's nice seeing a movie that's just laid bare, that is kind of, that you can choose what to, you know, what kind of mood and underlying feeling to put there or not as well. I think what would be really nice is to try a project where it isn't so to picture as well, because some of my favorite film music, whether it's like Eno, never writes to picture. He just writes stuff and then it gets chucked in loads of movies. But it's crazy how poignant some of his work is when it's to picture. So sometimes I like those like scores that isn't necessarily written to the picture. It's just kind of written to the idea of the story in the film. So that'd be interesting to explore too.
Yeah, I think I was listening to an interview where Christopher Nolan wouldn't show Hans Zimmer any picture. I think it was for The Dark Knight. He wouldn't show him the picture, and Hans Zimmer was like, I got to see the picture. And he was like, no, right, right, come back. And he's like, you sure? Because there's a lot of money on the line here, and this is going to be a big film. He's like, no, right. And of course we have, you know, a score that was pretty, you know, kind of changed the face of film music for a while there, so...
Yeah, you got to be brave. There's no point in doing it by halves. And, you know, you can always write more music. It's always that.
Well, I don't know. If you only have a week and a half. Yeah, I think the level of bravery you guys went through delivering the whole score in one chunk, that's a big one. That's. But you guys did a really great job. The film has a very unique sound because of it. I have to admit, this movie is right in my wheelhouse as far as my style of movie. It's got, you know, the thriller aspect of it, a little bit of horror, but it's not, you know, it's not jump scare horror. It's more of a psychological horror, if you will. But it's streaming on Hulu right now. And to close us out here, do you have any other projects coming up, even if it's non-film stuff, that you guys can talk about besides the vest inside ear project, which sounds amazing, but anything else you guys want to promote?
Oh, so much. we have an EP coming. We've got two EPs coming out back to back at the moment before our next album. They're called Art Rituals 1 and 2. So you can jump on Spotify and check those out. It's just Never Not Nothing. And with that, we're collaborating with different visual artists. Each of them are kind of reimagining our symbol we created for altruism, and they are reimagining it in their own vision. And we're selling the works, auctioning the works off and the prints off for small charities that are local to them that are struggling with funding. Mm. So anyone that wants a nice piece of art on their wall or is an art collector or anything like that, you know, check it out.
Very cool.
And it will all be going to really, really important causes like Active Arts that we've just worked with. It's an arts and music school for people with learning difficulties, and they're doing amazing work.
Wow.
And they're in danger of shutting down because they're not getting funding from our government.
Wow. Well, I mean, it's great you're supporting that. Wonderful. Well, any parting thoughts for our listeners? Again, the movie is The Owners, starring Macy Williams from Game of Thrones fame, as well as Sylvester McCoy. And it's on Hulu at this point. Any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Enjoy.
I want you to know that's a little game I play with my guests.
That was a hard one.
Everybody is always tongue-tied when I say any parting thoughts, and there's always just dead silence. I don't know why I do it, but
that's one of those games you never can win. That's
that's why you guys work in a duo.
I knew vibes would be like struggling.
Like, yeah, you take this one.
I just threw him under the bus. I threw him under the bus. B maximum. That's it.
B maximum, indeed. Well, you can follow the band at their website, which is nevernotnothing.com. And they have tons of music on all of the streaming platforms. The film, again, is The Owners, and it is available on Prime Video. It's available on Hulu. Again, the score was done by Never Not Nothing. So thank you so much for being here with me today, and enjoyed speaking with you guys. Yeah, I want to remind our listeners, check out our new Patreon page, patreon.com/hookedonscore. You can sign up to get bonus episodes and content there. And as always, and you can find all of your social media information on your website. Is there anything you guys want to hand out as far as handles for social media or anything like that?
It's all Never Not Nothing. So Instagram/NeverNotNothing, Twitter, Facebook, all of the above.
All the same. Easy. Wonderful. All right. Well, thanks again. And we will see you next week on another episode of Hooked on Score.
All right, everyone. That's our show. Bye.